You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today I am recording this in advance because right now, when you're listening to this and when this launches, I am balls deep in a South Dakota hunt. More than likely, I'm getting my ass handed to me by the deer of Western South Dakota, and but the good news is that I'm looking at the forecast and it's supposed to be warm for like the first 2 days, like in the 70s, which should be very nice. And then a cold front's going to come in where it's going to rain. I think there's a 50% chance, 30, 40, 50% chance it's going to rain for 2 days. Then it's going to potentially snow. And then the highs are going to be in the high 20s, low 30s. And so this is the latest that I have ever been in South Dakota, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what plays out because of this. You know, I have a feeling I'm going to see a lot of deer movement, especially in this with this front that's coming through. The issue slowly becomes, if it's going to be wet for a lot of days, whether or not I will be able to drive as far as I need to get to some of the positions or locations that I have hunted in the past. A lot of dirt roads, a lot of sand roads, a couple hills, three actually I'm thinking of in particular where it's really steep. And if it's a lot of like big pebbles that make it slippery even when it's dry. And so there's some things that I need to think about there, and I'm hoping that either the rain is minimal in this event, and then that allows me to get to where I want to get. And so there's that. Short intro today, but we're going to be talking with a guy named Jeremy Nicholson from Missouri who just shot the biggest buck of his life and just shot the biggest buck that has been on his farm in a very, very, very long time, if ever. And so today we talk about this fully functioning farm, both in agriculture and livestock. We talk about the fact that it's mainly agriculture and cattle operation, and it's not a lot of trees, right? But the deer live on another farm, and they use his farm as a transition, use his farm as a food source. And so that's what the whole breakdown. If you've ever listened to this podcast, you know exactly what's coming your way. An awesome story, an awesome breakdown, and not only in the deer herd itself, the terrain that this hunter hunts on, and then the strategy that went into killing this buck. And so that's what we're talking about today. I'm going to run through this quick because I got to get back to hunting. Here we go with the commercials. If you're looking for a badass saddle, check out Tethered. Tethered is an awesome saddle operation. I am going to be doing a review on the, or I, by this time, I think I will have already done it, but it's a review on some of the saddles that I've hunted with, some of the Tethered equipment that I've used. And, so look forward to that. I'm mumbling on my words here, but if you're looking for a saddle, saddle hunting accessories, go check out tetherednation.com, wasparchery.com. My goal is to put a three-blade jackhammer deep into the vitals, if not all the way through the vitals of a giant South Dakota mule deer this year. And so stand by for pictures of that, if at all. It could be a small mule deer too, because I'm going to shoot anything with anything legal with antlers. And so wasparchery.com is going to be the slaying device that I use, and that is wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Code Blue Sense, discount code NFC20. I'm starting to have deer show up on my trail cameras that are in front of mock scrapes, and it seems to be working. They seem to be working. I probably need to freshen up some of the scrapes that I've made and put a little of their synthetic scent in there as well. CodeBlueSense.com. Woodman's Pal. The Woodman's Pal is a habitat tool. It's basically a machete. It's made in America. It's been around since the 40s. I'm going to keep one in my pack and one in my truck, and that way if I ever need to hack some bushes, chop some tree limbs down, I can use it. So woodmanspal.com. Huntworth. Also, we'll be talking about Huntworth in this upcoming hunting gear podcast that I'll be talking about some of the products that I've been using there. So it's going to be a very short episode. Just want to run through a couple things. And then last but not least, Vortex Optics. If you're looking for a good optics, man, go check out the brand new Triumph HD binocular. They have a new youth model out. Go check that out. And if you guys are interested in a discount, I can send you, it won't be directly to Vortex, but I can send you to some website like Euro Optic or something like that, where you can get a 10% discount off of the Vortex gear that they have. And then also they have a apparel line too. So if you're looking for some cool kick-ass t-shirts, hats, shirts, shorts, you name it, they have it, vortexoptics.com. And then last but not least is, I've said last but not least on the last two, but Full Sneak Gear, brand new apparel company that I've started, brand new, just launched a stocking cap. That's where you're going to find the official Nine Finger Chronicles hat, and then as well as some really cool t-shirt designs that are coming down the pipe. And I'm excited to see what the next t-shirt has to offer, because I'm working with a company that makes death metal t-shirts for death metal bands. So imagine a zombie buck from your nightmares coming your way. So take that with a grain of salt. All right, let's get into today's episode with Jeremy Nicholson on an absolutely gigantic buck that he got this early season. Enjoy. 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And today we're going to be joined by Jeremy Nicholson of Missouri. Dude, thanks for taking time out of your day to hop on.
No problem. Happy to be here.
All right. So you slayed a giant, and we're going to get into that whole story here in a moment. But before we do, what do you do for a living?
So, yeah, I'm the lead sales consultant for a e-commerce agency and digital marketing agency called Classy Llama. So we're based out of Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
Yep, we do a lot of digital marketing stuff. And build transactional websites for people in a lot of automotive, a lot of manufacturing, a lot of outdoor industry, to be honest. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what we do. I, travel once or twice a month, but stay pretty busy with that.
Gotcha. So for the uninitiated, you help other companies sell their products digitally.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And build websites mainly on the BigCommerce Adobe platforms.
Perfect. So, perfect.
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Let's talk about. I don't know why this first question popped into my head, but I feel like, and maybe it's because I live in Iowa and I know a lot of people who hunt Missouri too, or live in Missouri and hunt Missouri, especially the guys from the Missouri Woods and Water podcast. They're over there in, I believe, Western Missouri, West Central, you know, Southwest. Anyway, I hear them talk about a lot of people talk about Missouri's rules and regulations as far as, you know, deer hunting is concerned. What are your thoughts? Good, bad, ugly?
It's going to be overall bad, in my opinion. I'm jealous of the Iowas.
Okay.
I'm jealous of the, you know, I'm not a big fan of the rifle seasons right during the rut. It's funny you asked that. I saw a picture on social media today of the 1984 deer season in Missouri and what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't allow anybody to shoot a doe.
Okay.
Right. And well, in the county I'm in, they didn't allow does. You know, you had to shoot bucks. I just remember growing up starting to hunt when I was like 10. So I'd have been in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
My grandpa and dad were like, don't shoot. We hardly ever saw deer.
Yeah.
Today there's a really good deer population. It's gotten a lot better. Overall regulations, I'm not a huge fan of the it being in the rut, the rifle season.
Yep.
Not a huge fan of the cheap non-resident tags. Obviously a resident, we've got some land up north, you know, about 50 miles from the Iowa line, and it gets littered with, you know, non-residents coming in. It's an easy state to hunt for non-residents. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I think what you're going to start seeing is a reduction of non-resident tags statewide. And I feel like, I don't know why, per se. I think that the hunters are finally going to start speaking up and saying, hey, dude, like, we don't like this, right?
Yeah.
And the only issue is that initially, I feel like it's going to tear the hunting community a little bit, because you go to some guy who loves hunting the rut with a rifle and you say, hey, dude, we're going to push it back a week. Like, when does the rifle season in Missouri start?
This year, November 10th, I believe. Okay. It's normally from the 10th to the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
Yep.
And there are just so many deer killed. You know, we've got up north, we've got several antler restriction counties, you know, 4-point sides. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see that helping at all. Yep. I see those beautiful 2-year-old tens that get shot is what I see. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, you know, here in Southwest Missouri, I mean, if you look at the deer we've killed up north versus the deer we've killed in Southwest Missouri, me, my brothers, and my dad, there's not any difference.
Yeah.
There's difference in body size, but as far as score and age, there's not much difference.
Right. This is, like, I agree with you, but I have this, always have this internal debate, right? If I said, hey man, I would love for, let's say I was a Missouri resident, but I'm a big bow hunter. I love to bow hunt. I want to push the rifle season back a week or 2 weeks or mimic Iowa, whatever the case may be, so that not so many deer are shot during the rut with a rifle.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause obviously hunting with a rifle during the rut is easier. Would you agree? Okay. So then I think of somebody who's a first time hunter or someone who can't put in the time dedicated to sight a bow in, right? Maybe they're just really busy. I mean, bow hunting's my passion. So I make time to go do that. Mm-hmm. But if we reduce or move that into a potentially colder time of year, into a portion of the year where the rut is winding down and deer start to move less. Do you think that would impact the overall license sales and hunters actually hunting numbers actually decline?
Yes, I believe it would.
Okay.
I believe it would. But I don't think it'd be like the first year or two. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say, for instance, we go into December with the rifle. I think the first year or two, people would go in and they'd hunt, right? Well, they would probably realize that you know, they're not maybe not killing as many deer. It's going to be colder, definitely. I mean, Missouri, the temperatures can be in the 70s, mm-hmm. You know, during the rifle season. So it's pretty comfortable still.
Yeah.
So I definitely think that it would be a loss of reduction of tags and definitely harvest for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. And then, but, oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, I can see what you're, I can definitely see why their thought process is what they, is what it is. And they don't want to, I think that people in Missouri don't want to be just like Iowa. So they have a lot of non-residents come in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, yeah. Obviously. And from my understanding, I know that Northern Missouri has that ag mm-hmm. mix, but the further south you get into it, you start to, like, especially when you're in between St. Louis and Kansas City through the Ozarks there. Holy cow, man. That's big timber country.
Yeah. Yeah. When you get into Lake of the Ozarks, and then you go straight down south to the middle of the state there, it's very, you know, Ozark mountainish.
Yep.
But once you get out, you know, to honestly, it's changed a lot in the last 10 years with, where we're located, you know, from basically Springfield, Missouri, west about to Kansas.
Yep.
There's a lot more crops now than what there was a decade ago.
Okay.
So I think that has a huge, we've seen a big difference in the quality of deer, obviously, Southwest Missouri, just from the crops. There's a lot more of them out here.
What are they doing? Turning, like old cattle pasture into cropland again?
Yep.
Are they clearing timber then as well?
There's not, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, there's some places that are clearing timber. We haven't seen it in the places we hunt. Mm-hmm. We've just seen open fields go to crops.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, food source.
Which we like.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Food source equals bigger antlers, and everybody loves bigger antlers, right? All right. So let's talk a little bit about the terrain on your farm that you hunt, especially this particular deer. Talk about the terrain that you hunt. Talk about the neighboring or like the whole area surrounding your farms and what that terrain looks like.
Sure. Terrain is, you know, I'd call it, it's pretty rolling hills, creeks, not huge ditches. There's not a lot of big, deep ditches like we see up when we hunt up north in northern Missouri.
Yep.
So a lot, there's going to be food. There's going to be blocks of timber. So the particular area that we hunting, we're limited in timber, mm-hmm. With some of our farms. So we have several deer that they're definitely not living just on where we can hunt. They're back and forth, you know, on other people's property, on our property, you know, so that's a little bit what it's like. So,
yeah, I gotcha. Okay. And so is it like you said rolling hills, but are we talking like a timber egg mix with timbered fingers, or are we talking bigger blocks of woods?
I'm talking bigger blocks. Like biggest block would probably be around, I would say 50, 60 acres of timber.
Okay.
And then some fingers, we don't get a lot of fingers that go out into these big ag fields.
Yep.
You know, I would say ag fields would be anywhere between 10 to 30, 40 acres that you're going to see. You're not going to see these big 100 acre ag fields with big, you know, fingers of timber coming out. We're not hunting that in Southwest Missouri.
Okay, cool. All right. So then with that said, break down your farm, you know, what the access is like what kind of, I mean, is it heavy bedding? Do you have a lot of transition? Do you have good staging? Do you have food? What's the story there?
I would say it varies on the properties, where I was particularly hunting. I would say it's all food, mm-hmm. Well, not all food, about 90% of food. And then there's about 10% of transition, mm-hmm. where we try to intercept them when they're coming off, you know, off of us on food to bedding.
Gotcha.
So, and that's what got this one.
Okay. So you're telling me that, and I just envision this, that it's a big, mm-hmm. it's big mm-hmm. ag field with like buffer strips and waterways that run through it.
Yeah. Fence crossings. So, on this particular piece, there's, you know, going to be, you know, it's going to be, it's really just like a 50, 60 acre piece, right?
Okay.
And it's mainly beans right now. So, there's fence rows that they like to use. You know, we're pretty, you know, we're pretty detailed with our cameras. So, yep. You know, there's some spots where we've gotten pictures and we know where deer go and how they move the terrain. And then our access, you know, our access really helps. We can access it from both sides. So we know, you know, we're pretty, we've seen these deer make these routes in the past. So being able to know what they like, is definitely what helps.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Sure.
Okay. Do you guys have food plots or leave food in the fields?
Yeah, we do. We have a few different types of food plots. We have clover, we've got some turnips, some brassicas, but you know, mainly on this particular piece that I was at, it was just beans. We don't have any food plots on it, just okay. Standing beans. I haven't combined them yet.
Yeah. I believe you were saying before we started recording that this mm-hmm. is this is not only ag, but it's also a working cattle, like dairy operation.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
I grew up on a dairy farm.
Oh, okay.
My grandpa sold that dairy farm. Now my dad he backgrounds cattle.
Okay.
So he has cattle on the farm, but they, you know, they're not in this area.
Gotcha.
Right? We own around, there's about 300 acres here.
Yep.
So about 150 of it's cattle. Okay. The other we can hunt it.
Gotcha. Okay. And so, where are the deer bedding? Because it sounded to mm-hmm. me like the way you described it, they're bedding on a neighboring farm and then mm-hmm. popping over to you, and then yeah. you have kind of this transition. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, perfect. Yep, that's accurate. There's a big block of timber, a timbered area, probably, I would say, 300 acres of, you know, where it's, there's a lot of wood, there's a lot of woods, there's some creeks through there. There's not hardly any ag in yep. that piece.
Yep.
So, you know, they're traveling a couple hundred yards to get to our property to hunt. So there's a pretty big transition area.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see some deer that'll come stay, you know, stay on us for maybe a day or two, and then we won't get a picture of them for weeks. Yeah. Right. And that's how this one was the majority of the time.
Okay. So this buck that I'm looking at here is a slob. I mean, he's yeah. gigantic. I mean, what's that one brow tine? Is that 10 inches, 12 inches?
Yeah, it's a little over 10. Yeah, I'm okay. looking at it right now. Yeah. So a little over 10.
Okay, so people have to know about him, especially in a state like Missouri, right? I mean, were the surrounding farms serious hunters too? Did they have trail mm-hmm. cameras out? Did they know about him? Did they talk to you about him?
So, no, we didn't have any conversations at all. You know, we try to keep pretty quiet through ourselves, mm-hmm. me and my two brothers, my dad. We knew about this deer 2 years ago. We had one or two, well, one for sure, two probably pictures of him during the summer. Looked like a 3-year-old, probably had 14, 15 scorables. And we're like, wow, let's see about him. And then the next year we only had a few pictures of him. You know, didn't stay very much on our farm at all. And then this year we had a few pictures of him during the summer. And then, you know, he was very, very, like I said, just very similar. We hardly ever got pictures of him. We kind of had him in the back of our mind, but didn't really think we had a really great shot at him.
Yeah.
And then, I guess you know, a couple of Saturday mornings ago, it happened.
Yeah. So, on this farm that's mostly mm-hmm. ag, do you see an uptick in deer movement or homebodies on your farm, depending on what crop you have in the dirt?
Not particularly. We don't see too many changes with our deer with the crops. We don't rotate where we particularly are hunting. There's not much rotation. So Dan, it's just mainly soybeans is what it is. So okay. We don't see a lot of difference in that. Because there's not a lot of corn around where we're at.
Okay. So you're running beans on beans most time. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. All right.
And so obviously soybeans, summer deer love that.
Yep.
Love that. Yep. And so that's 3 years of history with this mm-hmm. buck. And then mm-hmm. and then they skedaddle after they strip velvet. Or did you ever get any hardhorn pictures of them on the property?
Yeah, we did. He was running with a pretty good bachelor group. They dispersed. There's a couple that are obviously a lot more, more noticeable. They're around the area a lot more. Yeah. This one, we hadn't had a picture of this one in several weeks. Mm-hmm. The last picture we had of him, we felt like his body didn't look very good.
Okay.
We felt like this was the deer we thought it was, he was kind of far away. We thought he might have looked sick. So kind of got a little worried about it. But again, wasn't spending a lot of time on our property. We're just kind of crossing our fingers, just hoping he might show up. This was for this area. This was really the only deer that we were wanting to shoot. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds that really were hoping we'd give them another year.
Okay. So you identified this year that this deer was sickly mm-hmm. looking. And then how much time went by from the time that you got that picture, the last picture of this buck, to the time season started and you were able to go hunt?
It was right around season opener.
Okay.
Whenever we got that picture, and we're like, I think Dad was like, he doesn't look, that deer doesn't look very good. And he was right. So that was the last picture, I believe. That was the last picture we had of him until I was able to harvest him.
Okay. All right. So
two and a half, 3 weeks.
Okay. Did you feel that he disappeared after that? I mean, when a deer, for me, when a deer does something like that, cause I live on a farm I hunt on a farm where summer is awesome. If I was to base, this summer was different though. Most of the time, summer's awesome. I'll put a mineral station out and I'll just get giants coming, like your typical Boone and Crockett deer coming to a mineral station in velvet. Pretty pictures to look at, but then I know when antlers, when the velvet comes off, it's mm-hmm. a new story, right? They shift, mm-hmm. they disperse, and some years I'm left with a good one, some years I'm not. And so I don't get too terribly excited because I know that there's this shift. Did your gut tell you he's gone or that he was going to stick around and you might have an opportunity for him?
My gut was that most of the time, he's not going to be on the property we can hunt.
Yep.
And therefore we don't have a very good chance of killing the deer. Okay. That's where our gut was. I mean, in the past we've had deer that are a lot more homebodies, yep. they're on the farm 60, 70, sometimes 80% of the time we feel like they're on the farm. We obviously feel like we have a lot better chance of harvesting those deer. And then guess what? Sometimes we don't. Sometimes they run, chase the kill off on the property and somebody shoots them.
Yep.
This was kind of got lucky on that deal where we actually were able to harvest a deer. I was able to harvest a deer that didn't spend majority of the time on our property.
Yeah. Okay.
It was nice to see that, circle come through.
Right. And with this farm being so much agriculture, are tree stand options limited? Are you hunting a lot out of a blind?
Most of it's tree stands.
Tree stands.
There's enough trees on the properties.
Okay.
That we're hunting a lot of, we had a lot of hang-ons. We've got several hang-ons on the properties. We do have a couple of, you know, makeshift platforms. We've got a hunting house that was made out of my grandma and grandpa's like little playhouse. We got creative with that. There so, and then we have our old school climbers that, you know, sometimes if we want to get in an old school climber, we will, I've got a Novik. So I've got a saddle.
You got all the tools.
We're just trying to do everything we can but mostly it's fixed stands that have already been prepped during the summer.
Gotcha. So, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And so with you not, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. What early season, right? So you said to yourself, hey, I want to go out and hunt on this day.
Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. What did you expect the deer to be doing? I want to mm-hmm. talk about from the bed to food pattern. Was this a morning hunt or afternoon hunt?
This is actually morning.
Morning hunt. Okay. Morning. All right. So I want you to talk to us about what the deer do on these properties where they get out of their bed, they come to food source, and then they transition back into bed. Yep. Walk us through the terrain that these deer are using and where your ambush points are in that line.
Sure. Yeah. So, obviously throughout the evening, they're going to be in the beans. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're going to be roaming around the beans. There's some oaks on that property. They're dropping acorns. So they're going to be there, majority of the deer. Then I would say there's a three pronged approach to a lot of these, where these deer will go. They can either go west, they can go east, or they can go south, to what we would call bed. Mm-hmm. We had a cold front come through. It was the first cold front we had in October. And I was able to access it. We have a really good access point from the south, so I can get in. The terrain is kind of rolling, so like I'm below the beans when I'm coming up. So I can hunt right next to the beans and still get in there. And it's a little risky if they're right in the corner, but thankfully they're not. Mm-hmm. I was able to get that deer luckily coming off of that field south and coming to the bed, which, you know, I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like that deer was headed, still had about 200 to 400 yards to go before he got to his bed.
Okay. All right. And so was this the first day that you could hunt or what?
Like, nope.
Was this a September kill or October?
It's October. Bow season starts September 15th. Yeah. So it was October. It was the first week of October.
Okay. All right. So right around season opener, 15 days previous, you know, whatever the days were, you got a picture of him somewhere in that same line.
Yes. Yes. So we got a picture of him, basically west, leaving that west access is what I would call it. That yep. Southwest access. We got a picture of him there. I couldn't get that to that area in the morning. So I was just going to hunt the south, I guess the south, southeastern mm-hmm. point where they're accessing. Right.
Okay.
So is that making sense? Yep. Kind of like yep. a kind of field, and they access bed southeast or southwest.
Yep.
Kind of go around some equipment, around some houses and things like that.
Okay. All right. And so then, why didn't you go after this deer right away in September when you got that picture of him?
We did. No, I did. We definitely were hunting. Mm-hmm. We just weren't seeing him.
Okay.
We hunted. I had a really good hunt, in an evening, my first sit there, I hunted, had a really good hunt, saw several does, saw a good young 10, just didn't see him, yeah. You know? And then we had some other places where we hunted. And I mean, if I can get a couple of hunts in, it's very difficult. I mean, mm-hmm. we've got, just like you, we've got I got three kids that are actively involved in sports. So, very hard for me to get afternoon hunts in
yep.
with the family.
Yep. All right. Was that first picture that you got of him this year, was that a nocturnal pick?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that tells you yep. a little bit, like what time of night was it? Was it close?
It's Dead, not even close. Right in the middle.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So this cold front comes through, right? Mm-hmm. And were, when you were hunting, were you looking for a doe? Were you looking for a different buck?
Nope. I came in to that hunt. My daughter had a junior high volleyball game, volleyball tournament. So I was able to sneak away, and I knew we had a northwest wind. I knew my access would be really good in this particular spot. And I knew I had till about 9 o'clock to hunt. Yep. So I was going to get a little tree stand therapy in, and I had.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Basically one deer on my mind. That's the only one I was going to, you know, so I went in there, crossing my fingers, didn't have a lot of high hopes. Mm-hmm. But the morning just felt good. Yeah. Like it just felt amazing out there. It was high pressure, you know, cooler temps. It just felt good to be in a tree, you know? And you know, the wind was good. I ended up bumping actually two does, or I think they were does, coming in. On the way in, you know, which surprised me a little bit, but
Okay. So, whereabouts did this day land in the cold front? Did the cold front come through and pass and it was bluebird skies?
It was, so I believe I go back on Wonderground and look, Thursday, I think the cold front came through, and the pressure was rising all the way. And ironically, it was peaking Saturday morning.
Okay.
Underground. So, the deer were everywhere that morning.
Yeah.
Saturday morning, they were absolutely everywhere. There was deer. Like when I left the stand, there was deer. My brothers were seeing deer. My dad was seeing deer. It was just one of those special mornings for sure.
Yeah. All right. So you're in a tree. Sun's starting to come up. What were you seeing?
Sun coming up, didn't see a lot really. As soon as I started where I can probably shooting light, I saw a doe to my right, and I was watching her. It was a pretty quiet morning, and all of a sudden, you know, I happened to put my binoculars down, look over to the left, and I see a deer in the it was very thick where I'm thick area right here in this corner, and there it was. Brought the binoculars up. I saw the brow tine and I saw mass. Okay. So I saw the brow and I saw mass, knew it was him, came right out in the opening, 15 yards, grunted at him or to stop him. Cause he was moving.
Yeah.
He was walking very quickly.
Yep.
He was going somewhere and I stopped him. And when I stopped him, he did a lot like one of my other deer, another deer I killed about in, I think, 2020, very mature deer up north. When I stopped him, his whole body just boom. Just froze.
Yep.
Bang.
Yep.
Like, what was that? Got out him, shot him, and then gone, ran off. Fletchings, he went, it wasn't a full pass through. Couldn't really tell. He was gone so quickly. I couldn't tell how far, where it was on the body, if it was front of the shoulder, how far back it was. So we elected to, I made the phone calls, right?
Right.
And decided to, you know, just go ahead and go to my daughter's game. Went to two of her games, and then came back and got on the track, and he died in 100 yards. So it was pretty awesome.
But from the time that you saw him, to the time that you drew back and pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
How much time was that?
10 seconds. Like I had zero time or opportunity to just start freaking out. Like for me, a couple of other deer I've killed previously, I've grunted at them and I've seen them from 200 yards, 100 yards. And I've got to watch them come in and that's when I get wiggly
yeah
and I start squirming.
Agree.
This I had zero time zero time. And just, you know, the takeaway is just making sure you're ready. You know, it's, I've found it in the past, just catching myself not being ready, being on my phone, texting, scrolling, doing stuff like that. I think the takeaway is just, I'm just really thankful I was ready and I wasn't jacking around on my phone.
I'm going to say this, dude, that you make a valid point there, because this weekend I was hunting on a farm that does not get good, if any, cell reception. Okay. And so I couldn't use my phone. I mean, if I got bored, I would pull up old pictures and I'd scroll back like three years and, oh, hey, there's a picture of my kid, you know, from 3 years ago, whatever. Or I'm looking up, you know, trail camera pictures that I've saved, or I'm on Onyx, like a saved map on Onyx or something like that. And so I really wasn't on my phone a lot. I was just kind of had it in my binocular case and I was just watching nature, which is cool. And if I was on my phone, I bet you I wouldn't have seen this doe that was in front of me, which meant that I wouldn't have seen her pop her head up and look across the drainage where these two bucks were this weekend.
Yeah.
And so they weren't shooters, but still, you know, if I was messing around, maybe I was swinging in the saddle and they weren't paying attention and they would have blown me out. But what's it like shooting a deer of this caliber and then leaving it and going to pay attention to your daughter play a volleyball game?
There wasn't much paying attention, to be honest. The first call was to my wife. I told her, hey, hon, plans have changed today. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to drive separately to the volleyball tournament because I'm leaving after the second game. I'm not staying the rest of the day, you know? And she was good. She was a great sport with that. So after that second game, I peeled out of there. I start second guessing myself like crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember even second guessing myself if it was even that deer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, cause it just happened so quick. Like, did I black out? Was that even the deer that I thought it was? Was I way back? And then you get there, we get on the blood and, you know, it was a good shot. So, then one of the most special things about it is just, I was able to wait because my oldest brother, of course, he had a basketball tournament with his girls, and my younger brother had a basketball tournament with his boys. And, we were able to all get back there and just get on the track together. So all four of us were able to recover the animal because, I mean, let's be honest, like there's a lot of work that goes into it. Mm-hmm. And for all four of us to, all summer, prepping stands, putting cameras out, putting mineral out, hanging stands, switching stands. It's a lot of work. And I mean, that's why really it's just the process, really killing the animal. It was awesome.
Yeah.
But just the whole memories and the process of it all, it's almost sad when it ends.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. That's a good point. Like, I've had a couple deer that I've chased really hard throughout the years, and whether I got them or whether the neighbor got them, it's just like, now what? I guess now you just start over again, right?
Yeah.
And so I completely get that. Now, trail camera pictures, your dad said, hey, man, this deer doesn't look healthy. All right. Mm-hmm. So what did you find when you found the deer and walked up on him?
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
Yeah. Yeah, so when we got up on him, we noticed immediately he was real mangy, and his back hips were showing.
Yeah,
His spine was—he was real bony, very very small body. And then whenever I went, I was cleaning the animal. There was a big big spot scab area. Probably like a small pizza size, right? And we got him to the barn, and then, I went to cape him out, and he had a big spot right here under his jawline, like just a lump of something. And, local conservation agent. I called them and they came out and they looked at it and I didn't know what it was. It ended up being a big gland. I don't know if it's a, I think it's a thyroid gland. Anyway, it was a gland that he said, and it was about four times what it should be.
Okay.
He said the deer was severely infected. So
gotcha.
We're thinking maybe got hit by a car, because that in between bedding and food, there's definitely a road,
okay.
Farm road. So we could have got hit. Could have got shot. With a small caliber rifle, even.
Yeah.
So definitely, he definitely. Didn't look like he was going to make it through the rut for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which even makes it sweeter that we were able to harvest him.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And so right before he dies and coyotes get him or whatever, but at the same time, is he 170 plus?
Yeah, he taped it. I gross taped him at 180. So he is a large deer.
Yeah,
he
that's
had
a stud.
6 inches, 20. We didn't realize how much mass he was going to have. I'm looking at him here. Is
you got a skull cap right there?
Yeah.
Pull it out. Show the.
I took him to the taxidermist, and then the taxidermist just gives me the rack. But yeah. He still had velvet on, so he still got velvet on his tips, which makes me wonder if that has something to do with an injury.
Yeah.
Likely. But, you know, this three right here is 12 inches. This one's 11. And then the fork here is
on the
pretty
G, fork
deep.
On the left G2, deep fork. Yeah. Yeah. So what's he got, 12 scoreable or 11?
He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. He's got 13.
13
he's got a little point. He's got a little kicker here.
Yep.
He's got a kicker off his two.
Yep.
Just a little one.
Yep.
So, he's a special deer. So, yeah. I know that, with 15 plus years, they probably run in 20 to 30 cameras, in the area. That's 25 inches more than a deer we've ever gotten pictures of.
Okay.
So that's the kind of deer that was there.
So what makes a deer like that survive and get that big? Obviously he had some superior genetics, right? Mm-hmm. What did you think he was for an age?
I think he was five.
Five. Okay. Age. All right. So a 180 inch 5 year old man, that's pretty good. Especially in a rifle rut or a rut mm-hmm. rifle state. What do you think led to this deer getting away for all those years to get this age and get that antler size?
I think one of the main things has to do with the place that he lived most of his time, in the big bedding, big area there. It didn't seem like, I don't know what happened, but there used to be a big group come in and rifle hunt that.
Yep.
Haven't seen them in the last 2 years.
Good, right?
So one of the reasons why this deer was probably still alive. So, and it was World War III over there, for sure. But that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I think that this deer, he obviously any deer in Missouri that can get to five is a special animal that doesn't come out in daylight very much.
Right.
That is for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's awesome, man. What did the conservation officer do with the deer? Or like, did you have to do anything special, like something or hand over the body or something like that?
No, that was a learning. I mean, that was a learning experience for us too. They came in, they documented it, we were able to dismiss of the deer. They just documented it and said, "Yep, I wouldn't need it either. You're free to go."
Okay. Basically. All right. So, mm-hmm. You were advised not to eat the deer. I get it, mm-hmm. right? What about? Did they take any samples or do any testing?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
They didn't. It was pretty obvious that the deer was infected from a wound.
Okay.
That he, yeah.
Gotcha.
That's what the determination was.
Gotcha. All right, cool. Well, dude, yep. Congratulations on an absolute slob. Sounds like you have, how many tags can you get in Missouri?
You can get as many doe tags as you want. Yeah. It's a $2 state. So, technically I won't shoot a buck or I probably won't shoot one this year, the rest of the year, but, I'm able to shoot another one in rifle season.
Gotcha.
If I put one in rifle, then I can go back to archery.
So is that what, you can have one archery tag and then you can have one rifle tag. And if you don't fill your rifle tag, you can use that tag late season archery.
Correct.
Okay.
That's how I understand it anyway. Yeah. Right. So I haven't killed two bucks in the same year forever. So
yeah,
there's a lot of other people in the family that are after one. So, I'm looking forward to grabbing a video camera and putting my saddle on and hopping in the stand with them and taking my kids youth season. So looking for forward to a fun fall for sure.
That's awesome. So, man. That's awesome.
It kind of sucks to have your tag filled, but, it's kind of relieving. And you know, I kind of just look forward to just getting in a stand and getting outside and, you look at the news this morning and every morning and overseas, they're doing all they can to just stay alive in Israel right now. And we're out here able to hunt and enjoy our time. So very thankful for that.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to tagging out early, I've had a couple of those seasons where I've maybe hunted four total hunts, not counting like a early season weekend or something like that. But like my rut vacation that I dedicate time to is like three or four sits and then I tagged out. And so short term, you go, God, I wish I was in a tree. You tag that buck, you take him to the taxidermist and the processor. Yeah. Then it's kind of done. Right.
Yeah.
But you only think about that for just 1 year. Because then you kind of look back at it as this deer is going to be on your wall and you just look back at it and you go, hey man, that was cool. Right. That was cool that I got this buck. And you don't think so much about the amount of time that you didn't hunt. But the story is, you know, if it was a different, like, dude, I hunted this buck for like 20 days in a row. Right. And finally, you know, I finally got him,
that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, man, good luck the rest of the season. Hopefully, your dad or your brothers or the kids in the family get an opportunity at fill the freezer or get the experience or get another giant on the wall. So thanks for taking time out of your day to do this, man. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Good luck.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode in the books. Huge shout out to Jeremy. Huge shout out to all of you. Huge shout out to Tether, Wasp, Vortex, Code Blue, Woodman's Pal, Huntworth, and Full Sneak Gear. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. Last but not least, good vibes this time of year. It's going to get you a long way. And wear your damn safety harness. Have a good one. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.